General Aviation, Helping in Haiti, a report from Max Trescott. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Max Trescott, the 2008 National CFI of the Year. Max instructs at San Jose Flight Training in California. He is also the proprietor of Glass Cockpit Publishing and has some excellent books out, specifically on the Garmin products and also on IFR training. He blogs at maxtrescott.com and now contributes a column called Trends Aloft to EAA's Sport Aviation Magazine. A lot going on. Max, we appreciate you taking some time out from all this stuff to talk to our listeners today.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm doing much better than, unfortunately, a bunch of people in Haiti. And one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about was a recent writing in your blog about General Aviation's contribution in Haiti. I've heard some general things in some of the other media about the fact that General Aviation is staging in South Florida and is being valued by for its ability to get into smaller airports and things like that. But you had some very specific anecdotes to share in your blog about the contribution being made by General Aviation Aircraft.
I was lucky to spend about 9 days in Florida. I just got back. And one of the first things I did when I got there was drive up to Fort Pierce, which is the home of Missionary Flights International, which has been in Haiti for about 40 years, as I recall. And they have been very, very busy. I was there about 5 or 6 days after the earthquake. And they were so well set up that the State Highway Department had set up a flashing road sign telling people where to get off to bring in donations there. And the day I arrived, they said they'd had about 150 volunteers helping to sort donations and to label them and package them and weigh them and palletize them and so on. They had an incredibly efficient operation going, which I think it really just shows that we've got a lot of remarkable volunteer organizations that can step in instantly when there are problems. One of the things that really gave them immediate access was the fact that they have been there for so many years. They're known to the Haitians, and of course they were then able to get landing slots. The primary limiting factor early on was just getting a landing slot on the runway there at Port-au-Prince. One of the days that I was in Florida, I know they turned away something like 21 aircraft in one day that they just didn't have room to land there at the airport. And so I think that we've got really a huge logistics nightmare going on down there. But GA definitely is providing a role in getting supplies, food and equipment into Haiti.
One of the problems I have become aware of through anecdotes and frankly, things like Twitters and blogs is that all the effort appears to be focused on Port-au-Prince, which is the largest airport close to the epicenter of the earthquake, but that in many cases there's a growing need in some of the outlying areas where damage may have been less, but where many people have been bused or otherwise transported from Port-au-Prince to set up essentially earthquake refugee camps. Is there any role to be played by General Aviation in those outlying areas? Because I know those airports have to be, something more along the lines of caravans or huskies getting in and out.
It's a good question. I don't know the details. I have seen some video of some of the airports that MFI goes into, and they're certainly small, and the aircraft that they use are in the 206 category, so they can't carry huge amounts. Certainly, they're good at getting emergency medical supplies, but they wouldn't really be able to move enough food to these particular areas. I have a feeling that the aircraft within the country moving outward from Port-au-Prince are just not going to be able to carry enough food, and that they'll be carrying probably the emergency medical supplies. But it really just boils down to getting the roads cleared. And as you know, they've just been full of rubble and then finding enough trucks in Haiti to help move everything. So, again, I really think it's just a logistics problem. They're certainly getting lots of materials now into the port of Haiti and also into Port-au-Prince. But it's just a question of being able to move it to the other parts of the country in time.
Well, it sounds like by the time we could get any small aircraft solution up and operating, they'll probably have preempted it with trucks.
And a client of mine who has a caravan had volunteered it. It was actually a caravan on floats. But the two different organizations I talked to said, no, it wasn't exactly what they were looking for. So I think the initial desire has been to get the largest possible airplanes to get the most amount of stuff into Haiti. So given they have limited landing slots, they want to get as much shipped in with each particular flight. And maybe later on there'll be a need for the smaller aircraft.
Okay, Max, did you see any opportunities that you think maybe our listeners could get involved? If they're already up against the available limits on landing slots, is there anything someone with an aircraft that, you know, could be volunteered could do with it at this point?
That's a good question. I know that the NBAA is taking the leading role in trying to identify GA resources that are available to help. And some of those will include flights within the United States. So I think the best thing for any buddy who's either a pilot or an aircraft owner who wants to volunteer would be go to the National Business Aviation Association website, and they can go ahead and list there what they have available to help with.
Okay, Max, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about your new column in EAA Sport Aviation Magazine, because it sounds like they've got you on board to tackle a segment of reporting that is going to be only getting bigger in the years to come. Max Trescott is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott to talk about trends aloft. Max, you have a new column in EAA Sport Aviation Magazine, and tell us how that unfolded. I guess they asked you if you'd be interested in doing that back at AirVenture last year.
They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. You know, they invited me to come meet with them at AirVenture, and I hadn't particularly planned to do a column, but they were what can I say? They wanted me so badly I couldn't turn them down. They've put together a whole new redesign for EAA Sport Aviation Magazine, and I don't know if you've seen the first issue, but it's probably roughly 30-40% larger in size, which gives them tremendous amount of space to put in more drawings, and the cover photo is just spectacular for this one. It's got a 1932 autogyro taken either at dawn or sunset here, and it's just beautiful. So the what they specifically asked me to do is to write a column on avionics and technology, which is certainly a good match with the kinds of things that I'm doing otherwise.
Now, obviously, that's going to change dramatically. You seem to have somewhat specialized in the Garmin products. Is this going to kind of stretch you into looking at some of the other things that are out there?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I would say that it's hard not to specialize in Garmin since they're the 800-pound gorilla out there when it comes to glass cockpits and GPS and things like that. For example, the February column, which will be coming out within a week or two, will be talking about some small handheld devices that are not Garmin and are not glass panel and so on. I'm basically covering all of the kind of the fun world of gadgets that pilots might be using to as part of their aviation fun.
Well, I have to ask you, I think technology has reached the point now, especially when it comes to electronic tools for aviators, where the technology is running at a pace that I can't possibly keep up with, which is going to be tougher, finding ways to cover all the new toys or finding ways to bring people along to even catch up to the current ones?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. This morning I was listening to a local AM radio talk show where they were talking about, they said the growing gap between the capabilities of portable devices and people's need to use them. So it's kind of like Microsoft Word where, you know, all of us use about 5% of the features and the other 95% are just buried in there somewhere. I think that that's going to be the challenge for both manufacturers and for pilots is to, you know, figure out which of the things in there we want to use and make sure that these devices don't become so complex that we can't use the basic features.
Well, Max, I know you know that I'm involved in ham radio and have been for years. And I remember that when they first started being able to do surface mount technology and get things really, really small, we went through a period for a while where the engineers were way ahead of the people in the ergonomics department, and they developed things that had buttons too small for American fingers to push. And for a while, it looked like avionics were going to fall into that same trap, but that seems to have been discovered and be on the way back to being corrected fairly quickly.
Well, the good news is that we've got some of those avionics being designed and manufactured here in the U.S., so the engineers designing them do have American-sized fingers.
Right.
And that may be part of the difference between some of the consumer electronic devices that were on the leading edge of miniaturization as we moved into SMT, the surface mount technology, and everything got smaller and smaller.
Is there any reason why anybody should buy a plane with steam gauges anymore? I know that, you know, I deal with a lot of folks who are building very small aircraft and some that are not capable, you know, generally considered capable of long cross countries. And they say that to put a glass, you know, glass in them or a GPS, even a Dynon, is dramatic overkill. But my contention has been that if you're going to build an aircraft and spend hundreds of hours flying it over the next few years, I want to at least get in on the low end of the learning curve and accomplish that part of that while I'm flying.
Mm. I think that anybody who wants round gauges should definitely go ahead and, you know, buy aircraft with round gauges and use them. I think that people are going to be really surprised to see that even the most basic low-end aircraft today have low-end glass and so on. So, for example, I flew a couple different light sport aircraft just within the last week or two, and all of them, even their bare bones basic models, had glass panels. You couldn't buy those LSAs without the glass panels. So they're becoming certainly more pervasive, and the good news is on the low end, they're simple enough that they're certainly easy to learn, and they're probably good stepping stones for pilots who then want to get into, you know, larger, more capable aircraft with even more capable front panels. But certainly, you know, I would imagine that the aerobatic aircraft and all kinds of other airplanes, you know, people want to have the round gauges, go for it.
Well, Max, we appreciate your work and the fact that you're willing to kind of put yourself out there and share your knowledge, and we will watch carefully the Trends Aloft column and appreciate it and hope to touch base with you again.
Okay, so long, Paul. Da-da-da-da-da.
For the uninitiated, that's Ham Radio speak for bye-bye. Find Max's blog and links to his other endeavors at www.maxtrescott.com. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.